Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
Are listening to the urban sports scene with Will T and myself, Wole. The homie Ray Jeezy is out, and we are part of Empire Media. What's good, Will T?
Nothing much. Let's get the show started so we can get Lake on.
Look at you. You get it. Hey, Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kine Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders insider John Kine. And Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well.
All right. This show can be found on Podcast DC, the local app. That's what we're partners for, man. I'm here to pick you up when you're down and just invite you.
Appreciate you, man.
This show can be found on Podcast DC, the local app, with hundreds of options and local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of our Empire shows as well as other great content. Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We'll talk about what's happening at Washington Commanders training camp and their upcoming preseason game against the Carolina Panthers. We will have Sports Journey's Commanders reporter Lake Lewis Jr. on the show. He is also one of the main personalities on ABC Morning News for WOAY-TV at 8:20. We'll debate whether the Washington Wizards should trade for guard Colin Sexton. At 8:35, we'll talk about Kevin Durant wanting the Brooklyn Nets to fire coach Steve Nash and GM Sean Marks. Finally, we'll preview the upcoming junior welterweight showdown between Teofimo Lopez and Pedro Campa. But first, right now, we have Sports Journey's Washington Commanders reporter Lake Lewis on the line. What's good, Lake?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How you guys doing?
Blessed, man. Appreciate you being on there, man. I know that you're very busy, so we're going to get you out of here real quick.
Yes. You know it, Lake. Appreciate awesome. That. Also,
you know, I had to come on over here. I got a dinner date.
I know, I got you, Lake. Also, I want to mention again, Lake is one of the main personalities on ABC Morning News for WOAY-TV. So I'll make sure I give you all the plugs, Lake.
I appreciate that.
All right, Lake. Let me ask you a question. You've been at training camp. Who's caught your eye so far?
I mean, I think the young guys are the ones that are definitely stepping up. Sam Howell, I like what I see with him. I mean, he's raw, obviously, as a rookie, but, you can tell that he has some kind of command of a pro offense. You know, I guess that's what they did in North Carolina under Mack Brown, because he makes quick decisions with the football, and he doesn't look like a rookie that's, in over his head, so much so that I think if he can come out and have a couple really strong preseason games, it's going to make the team think about, are you carrying three quarterbacks, or are you more than likely carrying two, and are you going to carry your free agents, as far as deciding of Wentz and the kid you drafted, and they inherited Taylor Heinicke. So, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, he didn't really inherit him. He played for them in Carolina, so they're familiar with him, but still. Just interesting stuff there. And then, Brian Robinson, he's a guy that looks like he's going to be able to add something to their backfield. I mean, he's a big guy, kind of slender, looks a little bit like AP, as far as, the physique. But he can catch the ball out the backfield. And that's not something that they, asked him to do a lot at Alabama, where they just run north-south. But he looks like a guy that, could really give them some meaningful minutes. You know, and as far as the veterans, I mean, what can you say about Terry McLaurin? I mean, he's out there making plays every day. But another guy, and you know, I got to do it. We are, because Jahan Dotson looks like, you know, as I knew, advertised. You know, I broadcast games up there at Penn State, so I've seen the kid for 3 years, and you know, he to me, I've told people for a long time, this kid has a chance to go down as the best receiver ever coming out of Penn State. That's how good he is, and he's great route runner, great hands. I'm telling people right now, you know, his comp to me is Odell Beckham. That's his comp to me. Oh, wow. Because
that's high praise. You know,
that is high, very high praise.
Yeah, you know, you really don't know how fast Odell is until he's in the open field. That's Dotson. You know, when he gets in the open field, no one's catching him. But you know, he's just so smooth. You don't realize how fast he's running by people or how fast he's getting in and out of his routes. But anything near him within a foot of his range, his catch range, he's catching it. I don't care who's on him. The ball sticks to his hand. So really impressed with him as well.
So like you mentioned Sam Howell. So would you say that Sam Howell is he looking better than Carson Wentz?
No. Okay. I'm not going to go that far.
Okay.
I mean, Carson Wentz makes throws that make you scratch your head. And then he makes throws that wow you. Like, his arm strength is phenomenal. It's there. But, you know, he's been inconsistent, you know, with his balls. I mean, some of the throws are high. They sell on him a lot. And it's kind of surprising considering he's 6'5", you know, almost close to 6'6". He's a big dude for his balls to be so high over receivers. But I just think that sometimes that's just getting used to the, you know, familiar with, you know, the packages and the plays. And, you know, I don't know if that's something that should be a big cause for concern right now. I mean, last year people said he wasn't that good. He was inaccurate in Indianapolis, but he had 27 touchdowns and only 7 interceptions. Mm-hmm. So if that's what you're going to get this year, I'm signing up for that right now on the phone with you guys.
Facts.
I never want another man's balls that high over me.
Oh, yeah, well, I know. And every time I check that, I'm like, I don't like the analogy.
I know.
Passing or sailing. How about that?
It's all good. It's all good, brother. Let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this question.
I gotta chill out on that one.
All right, but seriously,
back
to back to business though. The Commanders made a little bit of news today because they released their defensive line coach Sam Mills III. And the report that's come out of camp or out of the Commanders, you know, from the Commanders and Ron Rivera is that there was a difference in opinion or difference in philosophy, between Rivera and Sam Mills III. Let me ask you this, Lake. In all of your years of covering football, can you remember that a coach has made a change to his coaching staff less than 1 month before the season, and not only make that change, but it be to a very impactful position within his coaching staff?
Well, I mean, you know, there's been moves like this in the past, you know, and if you're going to make the move, you want to make it before the season starts. And, you know, they already have someone, you know, his assistant is a guy that a lot of people are really high on anyway. And, you know, so I don't think they're going to miss a beat as far as the scheme or schematic stuff like that. I just think, you know, the hard nose, the art, the yelling, and the, you know, Sam Mills Jr. was tough. I mean, he was almost a taskmaster tough. And I think that rubbed some of the guys the wrong way. I really do. And I think that, you know, for Ron Rivera to make that move shows you how bad it must have gotten, you know, as far as with the players on that D-line saying things, because you got to think his dad played for Ron Rivera.
Yeah,
you know, so
and he was on his staff in Carolina also.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you know, I don't think that was an easy decision. But kudos to Ron Rivera. You know, I know we kill him sometimes for not making certain decisions. Some people probably thought that he should have went one more and gone up the chain a little bit on the D coordinator, but that's not going to happen. And maybe they saw something that wasn't getting the best out of their defensive line. And let's face it, when you have all those first rounders sprinkled across that line, there needs to be better play, not just individual play. I know Chase Young 2 years ago, Defensive Rookie of the Year. Last year, John Allen had a breakout year. But you need Montez Sweat. You need Deron Payne. You need, you know, everyone on that line to step up and play cohesive football and be the dominant unit that a lot of people, including myself, and I'm sure you guys as well, think they can be potential-wise. You just got to play. So maybe that you know, the line coach just wasn't bringing out the best of them at the same time, chastising them. So you got to look at yourself in the mirror, too, if your unit's not performing well.
Let me ask you this. About 2 months ago, we saw that Warren Sapp was at their OTAs. Do you think there's a place for Warren Sapp on this on this coaching staff if he wants to get into coaching as a defensive line coach for Washington Commanders?
Yeah, there's always an opening for a Hall of Famer. I mean, of course, a guy of his stature. But I think what's going to happen is, I'd be shocked. And I'll come right out here on your show and say, it's going to be Ryan Kerrigan. That's what's going to happen. And I think it's a great move. Ryan just, told us all last week when I talked to him and, when he was at the facility, that's what he wants to do. And, he made no bones about it. It's not something he wants to do down the road. He wants to do it now. Even so much that he said that his wife and kids want him out the house, or they're not used to him being in there. So he clearly wants to still be involved with football. And what better way than to, usher in the Commanders' new name, new brand, with one of their all-time great players. Ryan was a guy that we all thought, sometimes maybe the team pumped him up a lot. But at the end of the day, he's a really good football player. I mean, the team does that. That's what they do. They find out it's good.
No, thank you. Remember,
and they make him.
Thank you. Remember, we used to talk about. Remember, we used to talk. I used to talk. Well, I used to talk about him a lot. So.
Yeah. But I mean, Ryan is an all time Washington great. He's a guy that commanded attention on the field. Double digit sacks pretty much every year. Started his first game. With a touchdown, tip ball, he ran him for a touchdown. I mean, so he's a fan favorite, and I will say this, he's one of the classiest guys that I've ever had the privilege to cover. So it'd be nice to get him in there, and I know the guys would listen to him because he's proven himself. And let's face it, he's proven himself on a limited arsenal. So, I mean, he was a bull rush guy that went up the field, and everything was about effort with him. But now you get a guy like that can get the guys to give the effort to go with their natural God-given abilities as far as, to go along with some technique. Now, Chase Young should be a guy that stands right out of Montez Sweat, guys that Ryan Kerrigan, played position-wise on that edge. And I think that he could help these guys. And I think it would be a good look for Ron Rivera and his staff to bring him on immediately.
All right, let's take a pause for the calls. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Right now, we're chatting with Sports Journey Commander reporter Lake Lewis Jr. All right, Lake, let me ask you this. Let's fast forward through the rest of this week. Saturday at 12 p.m., a lot of fans are going to be excited because this team has their first preseason game. Who should we be looking? Not we, because I'm not a fan. But who should the fans be looking out for? Keeping an eye out for this Saturday. And there's a second part to. Do we know what the schedule or the plan is for the starters?
Yeah, I mean, the starters are probably more than likely going to get a possession, or depending on how successful they are with the possession, you could see them for two. But I don't expect to see Carson Wentz beyond the 10-minute mark of the first quarter. I wouldn't be surprised actually if he didn't play. New system. So you definitely want to get him some work in a real game time situation, but maybe a series and that's it. But I think as far as people to look out for, I mean, I mentioned some of the guys earlier, Sam Howell. I mean, look out for him because he's probably going to get a full second half. And depending on how well he does, can he press Taylor Heinicke a little bit? I think he will, to be brutally honest with you. Look for Jahan Dotson, just early, because I don't think he's going to play a whole lot either. I mean, he's a starter, and they don't want to, get anyone injured that has an intricate role that they foresee. Brian Robinson's a guy that I think, you could look out and get a chance to see what he can do. But then on the other side of the ball, You know, I think you might see a guy like Khalik Hudson play a little bit longer, you know, maybe a first quarter. But he's a guy that's had a pretty good camp so far, you know, kind of solidifying himself as, you know, the third linebacker when they do three linebacker sets. But everyone knows that Ron Rivera likes to do two linebacker sets. So, you know, but I like what I see with him. Kent Butler is safety. I mean, he's a playmaker, and he's a guy that's really starting to, you know, push himself for some legitimate playing time. So there's a lot of guys. Elder at cornerback, I really like his game quite a bit. You know, there's a lot of guys that are kind of under the radar but are really good football players. And this is going to be – I think this is going to be one of the tougher calls as far as who makes this 53-man roster. Once you get to, like, 40, you know, it's gonna be tough for those other players because – they've got more talent across the board now, and they've got some depth. So there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be, you know, protected and put on that practice squad. The tight end position, you know, it's going to be interesting to see with Cole Turner and Curtis Hodges and, you know, Sammy's Reyes, you know, how they're going to fit all this stuff in, you know, because Logan Thomas is looking nice. Obviously, he's not going to be ready to start the season. But he will come back, you know, probably sooner than later to start when the season starts. Mm-hmm. So you have all these tight ends. So are you going to keep four tight ends? Some teams, you know, traditionally would do that. But who's going to be your fourth tight end? You know, there's going to be an odd man out in this because obviously John Bates is going to be on the roster as well. And he's your second tight end, you know. So, you know, I would look at the tight end position as well.
So, like, before I let you go, I do have one question. So who – like they lost, you know, a valuable kickoff returner, punt returner last year in Carter. Mm-hmm. So who's gonna pick up that role?
We are. Come on now.
Oh, he's gonna do that too.
Of course.
You gotta say that dog for offense.
Listen. He's special at returning punts. Okay. That, I mean, when I say special, go back and look at the tape. Mm-hmm. I mean, led the Big Ten. I mean, that's what he does. Okay. I mean, and teams were kicking away from him intentionally because when he touched the ball, it was you held your breath every time. I mean, he's that phenomenal in the open space. So, you know, when you get a chance, go back and look at Jahan Dotson, you know, punt returns at Penn State, and you'll be amazed at what you see.
All right. This is before we get you out of here, one last fun question for you. It's Tuesday. Mm-hmm. We appreciate you joining us. It's date night. So in West Virginia, is it a white cloth restaurant or are you at a chain restaurant? Let us know. We'll let the people know. What's date like night in West Virginia?
Nah, this is the first time we've actually come to this place, but we're at Texas Roadhouse.
Gotcha. So.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. I like Texas.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
I like that spot.
Yeah.
I mean, and you mentioned that name, so they should give you a free meal once you go inside.
Advertisement.
I mean, it is kind of like that down here. I'm not going to lie.
I know.
Hey, your boy threw out the first pitch the other night for a baseball game.
Oh, did you really?
So,
oh,
I sure did. I'm going to post it tomorrow. So, yeah.
That's what's up, man. Congratulations
on
that.
You got it over, right? You got it over, right?
I got it over.
Okay, that's all. That's all that matters, man. That's all that matters.
And just remember, man, my offer, if you need someone to do live drops from the stadium, because you're in West Virginia, I got you. I'm the man. I could be there. Wole has the skills with the camera.
Oh, I'll be up there. Don't worry about that.
If you need someone just to join you, you know what I mean, in your live drop. I got a lot of gray hair in my beard, so it looks like I have wisdom when I'm talking about football.
That's why he's like Moses. He's seen God, man. It's like this.
You know, so if you need some sage advice or wisdom in your live drops, let me know. I can show up, man.
Hey, Lex, thanks for being on. Let our listeners know how they can catch you, you know, on social media and what you got coming down the pipe.
Well, you can check me out on social media at Lake Lewis. On Twitter, Lake Lewis Jr. on Facebook and Instagram. Also, you can go to WOAY.com, you know, to see my stuff from my anchoring. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, as always, SportsJourney.com. So we're still there, still doing it up. Shout out to Serge, the shooter, you know, doing a great job pictures and video for us. And then Bob Matthews, you know, has an article that we're going to post, you know, if not tonight, first thing in the morning. So it's coming, and it's a lot of stuff in the works, a lot of stuff, you know, going on. So definitely appreciate all the support.
All right, we appreciate you, brother, man.
We do, though. We definitely appreciate you, Lake. Thanks for being on, man. You know we appreciate you, man. Much love, man.
All right, you guys take care now.
All right, you too, man. I'll holler at you later. All right. All right. After the break, we will discuss, should the Wizards go after Colin Sexton? We'll debate that after the break. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For I just.
You dig?
Doses.
On Ampire Media. That's AmpireMedia.com.
.com.
Jerusalem, Itayalami, Gilondoloze, Uambenami, Zungangishilana, Jerusalem, Itayalami,
Gilondoloze. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T and myself, Wole. We are part of Ampire Media at AmpireMedia.com.
All right. Over the weekend, news broke that KD told the Brooklyn Nets.
No, we're talking the Wizards, man. Sexton.
Oh. Damn, I'm all the way down the...
I got you, bro.
That's all good, man. Appreciate you, man.
I got you. So the Washington Wizards have been rumored to be interested in Cleveland Cavaliers point guard Colin Sexton. Would he be a good fit for the Wizards?
As a sixth man, yes. Absolutely.
Oh, you don't think he's a starter on the team?
No. Well, so here's the thing, man. You got...
Monte Morris.
You got Monte Morris, and then you also have Bradley Beal, right? Mm-hmm. And Bradley Beal's a very ball-dominant guy. We have this conversation all the time. Yeah. Colin Sexton is at his best when he has the ball in his hands. That's why, you know, in my opinion, I believe there's some trepidation on their side to bring – on Cleveland's side to bring him back because Darius Garland Jr. has developed – into an all-star, and he's the primary playmaker. And then you know, if you were to bring Colin Sexton back, how could you put both of those guys in the same backcourt? Whether if you're going to start them in the same backcourt and it be effective and efficient, right? And also, Colin Sexton is known as a guy who's built a reputation, whether right or wrong, of being a guy who isn't necessarily efficient with the ball from a scoring perspective. Yeah. He's more of a volume scorer than he is with what people look for today, which is efficiency in shooting.
I mean, I think it'd be a good fit because he has the mentality to me of a dog, like, you know, John Wall. He's a guy that would get it. He takes the competition, he goes into it trying to bite your head off. You know what I mean? Like, to your point, yeah, he's not as efficient, but I look at him as like a poor man John Wall. This is just a guy that, yeah, is he the playmaking point guard, getting 10 assists type of guy? I think time will tell. I think he can get to that role. I mean, Cleveland's a whole different animal, especially when you got Garland. When they drafted Garland, and you know him, they're basically playing two point guards, one and the two. You're playing
guards. You got two guys who aren't from a height perspective.
Yeah, height aren't really two guards. So I just think that, you know, in a situation where you play with a guy like Bradley Beal, it will allow you to play your natural position. You know, I just felt like if you watch games before his injury, man, like he was chilling. You know what I mean? That obviously they went to another level once, you know, when he went down, the team got into a role, but he was killing it anyway. So I just think that if the Wizards had the opportunity to get him, they should. I don't think the Wizards had the money or the tools to get him. I think they had the players, but they had the money to get him. And especially to your point, right? I mean, Will, that they got Morris, right? So it's like, then do they really need to go that hard in getting a player like that anywhere?
Look, man, Colin Sexton, he shouldn't necessarily be that down because he hasn't signed a long-term contract that he's looking for, right? There are guys who
he's trying to get.
Yeah, there are guys whose game projects similar to his that made a very long career in the NBA. Specifically, I'm talking about Lou Will. I'm talking about Jamal Crawford,
right.
Like guys who have been known, guys who can get a bucket, you know, a six man who can go get you a bucket in any situation, even in crunch time, you know. So I know that for him, he's probably disappointed that he may not be getting the offers that he wants. But the best thing he could do is, if he's not getting those offers, sign that qualifying offer with Cleveland, ball out, and then you take yourself in the summer of 2023 and you go out there and maybe you don't get the 20 million, but you get something closer to a team, you know, to a team that's looking for a piece over the top to put them over the top.
Reading a couple of Facebook comments, Woj Tech posted, unless they try it, we will never know, but I see him redundant next to Bill. Wizards could use a Chris Paul, John Wall kind of player. Matt on Facebook posted, if he can fit in the salary structure, he can fit on the court. Greg McClain said, if we were to get him, somebody here would still find something to complain about signing.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I might be that guy. You know, I'm known to criticize the Wizards, you know, acquisitions, especially free agent acquisitions, if they overpay for those guys. So
yeah,
it's possible.
I don't know. I feel like this is a young player. I feel like it's a good fit, but he gives me Wall vibes, and I think, you know, for the Wizards, they need a guy that
Wall vibes.
He gives me Wall vibes.
Ooh, like, that's interesting.
Like, what I mean by that is that the mentality. You know what I mean? Like, you're not scared of anybody. It's like the same reason why I like Jaylen Brown so much. It's because whoever you're going against, you don't feel like they're better than you. It goes back to what we saw. You know, who can forget the video that went viral with Colin Sexton in college, where, you know, like the intensity of playing defense. You know, he played with Avery Johnson in Alabama. Did. Like the way he plays defense, he's a guy that, you know, had to carry a team in Bama. And in Cleveland, I mean, his rookie year was a good rookie year. They went and got Garland. Garland was one of the better players in the country when he came out. So you had to get Garland. Like, it's one of those players you just kind of had to get. And the unfortunate thing that you played the same position. So you know what happens, right? Usually what happens, you got two guys play the same position. It doesn't really work out. You know what I mean? They'll say, yeah, maybe we can play the both of them, but it really doesn't work out.
No.
You're going to choose one.
Yeah, especially when one's been injured and the other one's developed into an all-star.
And also, and the other one is developed to a point where, like you just mentioned, he's a shooter too. Like, he can shoot that ball. So you're going to, in today's game where it's a copycat league, right? You're going to want a guy that can give you more spacing because he's that J. He has the J. So he allows spacing for the bigs and whatnot, because you gotta worry about Garland's range and his jumper. So yeah. So I feel like in this situation with the Wizards, I mean, if you build it a certain way, like you got Bradley Beal, yes, he's ball dominant. And you're right, Sexton needs the ball in his hands, but it gets to a point where, like, there's other things I think he can do to help the team win.
Ultimately, for me, if they sign him, he will be the quintessential six man. In my opinion, for this team. If I look at the way that this team is built,
apparently
constructed, he would be the quintessential six man.
Somebody you could just get a ball and say, just go.
Yeah, in a second. And
nothing wrong with that, though, real talk.
Not only is there nothing wrong with that, it's essential. Yeah. It's essential in today's game. You need a guy who can create baskets for himself and others coming off the bench for you.
Yeah.
And could do it at a high clip.
Yeah. I've always, like, that type of role has always worried me for a younger player, because I didn't like it for – I ain't going to lie, at the time, I didn't like it for Jamal Crawford. I thought Jamal Crawford could go. He's a dude – I thought he could have been an all-star, but somebody, like, kind of valued him as a starter to put up numbers like that. But when you look at other players like that, like, there are other players that are older in their age, they're six men and get buckets. I'm like, all right, it's cool. Eric Gordon likes a six man. I don't like that either. I didn't like that either for a while.
Why?
Because Eric Gordon got game.
He does. I mean, he does, but then, you know.
Because there's guys in the league that are starting. I guess I look at it. You know, I have that old mindset. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of guys starting over him that's, like, starting other teams. And, like, there aren't better than Eric Gordon.
Yeah, that's true. But you also have to take this into consideration when you are developing kind of your rotation. Mm-hmm. You know, I can put that guy who may be starting, or Kevin Porter Jr., right, who's starting in front of him in Houston. Kevin Porter Jr. won't be as – I think he's a guy who can go get you a bucket, but when it comes to a guy who could be that central piece of your second unit.
Yeah.
And
– see, I agree with you. You think that Kevin Porter Jr. can be a
– what?
Could be a six man?
I think he could.
Yeah, I see him as a six man.
I think he could, but, you know, ultimately – you know, the thing about Eric Gordon is no matter any situation, you can bring him off the bench, he's going to go get you a he's going to go get you a bucket. And then the mentality standpoint, yeah, right? You know this about Eric Gordon. He's going to prepare as if he's a starter. Yeah. He's going to come in the gym every day and prepare as if he's a starter. You don't necessarily know how, you know, with Kevin Porter Jr., his mentality would be if you put him to the bench. So I guess there's also that you got to take into consideration.
That's true. Yeah, I just feel like the Wizards, that's a good point, though. Where would you pair Bradley Beal as a point guard? They do need a Chris Paul type point guard. But I would argue to say that, to be honest with you, I mean, I like Monty Morris.
Everybody needs a Chris Paul type point guard.
Yeah, everybody needs one, but that's not even in the same – but he's not even – Monty Morris is not even in the same category. You know what I mean? Like, they're – like, he's a – like, I look at Monty Morris as a – Monty Morris in terms of a point guard, like a – who's that? Like a Malcolm Brogdon. Just sturdy. They're not setting you up. You know what I mean? Like
I enjoy Malcolm Brogdon's game. His game to me is
like
similar to Andre Miller's, right? And
not like the passer as Andre Miller.
No, he's not. But very steady at the point.
Steady, I agree. Steady, yes.
Bigger, physical defender.
Agree.
Can knock down an open J. Yes. Isn't a guy that. Is going to go out there and take a lot of terrible shots, and he'll get you in your sets, and he'll create the right offense for you.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah, I agree. I think that's pretty much that elk. But yeah, we'll see. All right, Will. Now you can do this. You can do this read though.
All right. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Wole, Wole and Will T. Ray Jeezy is out tonight.
Oh, dude, I was about to take us to break.
Oh, man.
Let's
not go to break, man. Let's just keep going. Basketball. We got to do a break.
No, all right, we're going to do a break. Kevin Durant.
Yeah, Kevin Durant, man.
All right, well, let's get into the – all right, you know what? Get into the Kevin Durant thing, bro.
All right, man.
I'm with you.
Kevin Durant told the Nets brass that it's either him or Steve Nash and Sean Marks. Mm-hmm. All right. Over the weekend. You know, Joe Tsai, he recently came out, I believe, Sunday or Monday.
Yeah,
and he tweeted that support of his guys in the front office, you know, and his coach. So let me ask you this. We usually know that a tweet from an owner or I have confidence is usually the death mark, right? It's usually not too long after that, those guys are gone.
We cut next.
Yes. So let me ask you this. Do you think... do you think the Nets owner made the right decision, or do you think that he kind of stabbed himself in the foot considering where they're at with Durant?
He should have been quiet. Don't have to respond to anything to social media. Like, who cares? Like, you're the owner of the basketball team. But I will say this though, if it is true that he decided to choose Steve Nash and Sean Marks over Kevin Durant. I said this. It's Kevin Durant's fault and Kyrie that they have Steve Nash as coaches. Like, you chose this. You chose violence, right? You chose the situation.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Steve Nash, it's out there. We see it. As fans, we see it in terms of coaching. And there, I don't know if you've seen it, even what's the boy they drafted? Because Ray likes him. The boy they drafted last year.
Cam Thomas?
Yes. It's a summer league clip, and it was something about Steve Nash, and he rolled his eyes. This is before all of this beef. This is during summer league.
Mm-hmm.
And he rolled his eyes about Steve Nash. So it's out there. There's something about Steve Nash as a coach that these players aren't vibing, period. So the best player in the game, arguably in the game, comes up to you and says, I know they don't want to give too much power, but, you know, you need to get rid of Steve Nash or whatever. It's not like you're losing – a Hall of Fame coach. Steve Nash has shown you that right now, at the moment, that he needs some work as a head coach.
I have a couple of thoughts on this.
I'll break them down.
In the age of player empowerment, right? We've seen that, and this was a statement that came from Kyrie Irving last year. You know, when it comes to decision making, me, Kevin, Sean, and Steve Nash will make the decision together, right? So, you know, this is a statement that he's come out and said, right? And we all know from the reporting that's been out there is that, you know, the Nets have essentially turned over this franchise to KD and to Kyrie, you know. And then, you know, speaking of player empowerment, we look in across the country in L.A. with LeBron.
Oh, yeah.
LeBron was an advocate for Russell Westbrook joining that team, right? Melo, all those guys, man. So now as we see this kind of unfold out in the public, the question becomes, all right, yes, you know, player empowerment. We all like to see the players in power because we as fans, even though the ownership, you know, they have a lot to do with the structure of the NBA and the organization. But, you know, us as fans, we don't care about that. We care about the players on the seat. The players is what draws us to the arena, right? So as we see these two occurrences of probably the two biggest stars in basketball, do we start to see ownership and organizations take some of that power away? You know, because look, we gave you the power, and we gave you the power in Brooklyn. We gave you the power against one of for one of the most historic franchises in the NBA or all the sports with the Lakers, and you ruined that. So now, what do the owners and the organization do? Do they start to take some of it back from here on, from this point on?
Let's keep it a buck. They should. I think some of these players got way too much power. I love LeBron. He has way too much power. Kevin Durant, way too much power. I get, like, now, if you didn't, I guess I would, I understand Kevin Durant's frustrations, but there is an issue, what you just said. Like, dude, like, you chose violence. You Kyrie's, you pretty much, and the owner allowed this by giving him all this power, right? By saying, like, yo, you can choose the players, you can choose the coach. Like, you basically, you chose the coach. Like, you chose the coach. You chose Steve Nash. So now it's to a point, if you're being a cynic, you're being real, just like LeBron, like, oh, you thought Russ was going to work? Well, it ain't work. Now you're on the low, you're trying to get rid of Russ. You know what I'm saying? Or
I don't think it's on the low. I think Russ wants to go.
Yeah,
I don't,
but you know what I mean? But now it's like you found that you figured out, like, it didn't work. You know what I mean? And even there were reports even during the season that you were, like, they wanted – to trade, there were trades they thought they could got over Russ involved. Then you have, go ahead.
And also, and to my second point, there's a very, you know, he talks about he wants Steve Nash gone, but I think one of the things that people
allegedly.
One of the things that I don't think a lot of people are taking into consideration with kind of the decline of this team over this past year is from a coaching standpoint. It is not just Steve Nash. It's because Ume Udoka got a head coaching job in Boston. And you also had Mike D'Antoni, who was an assistant on that team, not this past season, but the season before that. Yeah. So you take two of the most, you know, one of the most experienced, innovative coaches from an offensive perspective with D'Antoni, and then Udoka, who coached at the
NBA Finals.
Yeah, who his first season as a head coach went to the NBA Finals, but who had a lot of experience coaching in San Antonio with Popovich, and then he also had experience coaching.
In Philadelphia,
yeah, right? Yeah. So with Brett Brown. So he's worked with coaches. He's learned to build relationship with players. And I'm not saying that Steve Nash hasn't done that with his two star players, but I'm just curious to know why, you know, the sudden change or shift in the direct and from a mentality that Kevin Durant wants both of those guys gone.
If it's not just one, if it was just Kevin Durant, Kyrie goes every which way, so I'm not going to use Kyrie as an example. But when you see other players kind of like make these, you know, smirks and these remarks about, like, you could see a body language about Steve Nash, then it's like, oh, there's something. You know what I mean? Like, there's something. I don't know what it is, so I'm not going to speculate, but there's an issue. But to me, it goes back to the same reason we all talk, and I do too, like, we talk about LeBron. In that situation in L.A., like, there, some of the players I did want, but at the same time, like, that's your responsibility. Like, you wanted these players, you vouched for these players, and it didn't work out. Like, that's your responsibility because you took on that GM hat, right? So they empowered you. It didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So you kidding nothing. Like, that's what it is. In this situation, you were empowered. Like, you James Harden. Who signed off on James Harden?
Yeah, KD wanted him.
All right, you signed him all these people, man. Like, it didn't work.
Yeah, I mean, that's but that's player empowerment.
Yeah, so you're going to have to, like, look, when that happens to me, if I'm looking at, if I'm the owner, I'm like, all right, we went your route. It ain't work. I don't need to listen to you right now. I don't need to listen to you like that. Like, I'm trying to put out the best product for my team. So now I'm going to have to trust. Let me trust Sean Marks so he can do it and see if he can build this team the right way.
Not only that, if I'm Josiah, I have to look at it like, we've given you all you want, and you aren't accountable for it. Where's the leadership, right?
Ooh, good point.
Where's the leadership? I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm not going to look to Kyrie for leadership, because we've seen Kyrie as a guy who, I need a mental health day, you know, everything that's going on in the world. Yeah. You know, Kyrie goes with the wind from one day to the next, right?
Yeah.
But if I'm Josiah, I have to say, all right, yes, I have two of the top 10 players in the NBA, right?
Uh-huh.
But I don't have any leadership.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin Durant, to my knowledge, and I don't know how true this is, but, you know, the reports, once again, because I'm not in that locker room, has kind of refused to take that leadership role within the locker room and kind of get guys in check. And I think one of the things that you have to look, we can all look back to, is Kyrie, the handling of that situation. Like, did he go to him and say, look, bro, we in this together. I know, you know. I know you have your personal stance of why you don't want to get the vaccination, but we need you.
Yeah.
And our window for this is small.
Oh, yeah.
We need you. I need you here.
Yeah. And we trying to build a legacy.
Like, right, yeah.
That's what it's all about. Like, this KD move to Brooklyn is a legacy thing.
Absolutely. Look, Golden State, Steph and those guys, that core three, they've got another championship without you.
Without you. It's not I'm a KD believer. Like, dude, like, you were important to the championships. I'm not that person to diminish what you did. Like, they needed you.
Two times final MVP.
They needed you to beat LeBron. Like, they needed you. Draymond called you for a reason. Like, they needed
you.
Absolutely. So, we ain't crapping on KD. This ain't it.
No.
But I'm saying, to your point, is that, yo, it is a legacy. Because everything is about perspective. Perspective. Thank you. And the perspective is, you went on this Golden State juggernaut squad and got rings with them. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have your opportunity with your own squad. You had some good showings. Don't get me wrong, with your squad in Brooklyn. You had some good showings. Like,
yeah, you were a tennis shoe
away
from beating Milwaukee.
By yourself.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm gonna give you your flowers, right? But the end result is, within these two seasons, you're falling short.
I mean, it's three, let's be honest. Three. What, first season you didn't play?
Yeah, you didn't play three yet.
The second season you played 50-some-odd games. Yeah. This season, you played, 40-some-odd games?
Yeah.
So I believe in total he's played, like, 92 games over 3 years.
You're falling short. So it's not a knock. Like, you haven't even tasted the finals. And the Eastern Conference is supposed to be – at that time, people were like, oh, you're going to the East. Like, you about to get to the finals anytime you want. And then you look this season in the playoffs where the Boston Celtics and Jason Tatum
– they thrashed you.
Thrashed you. And – They made Kevin Durant struggle. I didn't think I would ever see that. Like, that offensive weapon struggle. So I'm just saying, like, at the end of the day, man, like, yes, you got to take accountability, like, and your legacy. But I get the pressure, like, their legacy is on the line, but all this is hindering that. And, you know, I know he likes to hoop. I know we all know that. We know KD. KD's a hooper. That's what he thinks about is hooping. That's what he thinks about. He does think about the narrative to a certain extent. But he doesn't. Like, he just wants to focus on basketball. That's his thing. But, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think he needs to leave that GM stuff alone and just hoop.
There are very few players who, when it comes to analyzing the type of guys that would be great to, you know, constructing a roster around their talents, most players aren't that great at that. They fail at it, right? Look at the guy who some people say is the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan.
Oh,
he's an owner. He's been an executive trying to put together a team. Look what he did in Washington.
Struggled.
That team couldn't get over.
For a while in Charlotte.
Absolutely.
For a while in Charlotte was struggling. Now he's starting to get some pieces.
Yeah, they finally have a star, LaMelo Ball.
Yeah, but for a while in Charlotte, it was the same way.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
So, I mean, in the age of player empowerment, I want these guys to get all that they can get. But when it comes to organizational structure and then also and in some elements developing a roster, that's why they're paid professionals from that. It's great to partner with your star players and get their input.
It should be a team, though.
But it's a team effort, and ultimately those guys that sit up in those offices, they should have the final say.
Agreed. That's what I'm saying. They need to have the final say, because what he's doing, what his issue is now, it's just not worth it, bro. It's not worth it.
All right. Teofimo Lopez regain his stardom this weekend? We'll talk about Lopez's upcoming fight after the break. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For Aegis.
You dig?
Deuces.
On Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com.
.com. Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback. More so than before, but tonight. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T and myself, Wole, and we are part of Empire Media. That's at empiremedia.com. All right. You want me to say it?
I'll say it. Oh, no. Saturday is going down. All right. Teofimo Lopez cool. Back in the ring, back in prime time, back being that guy, the headliner. He returns to the ring Saturday. He's now competing in the junior welterweight division. He faces Pedro Campa in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. What defines a good showing for Teofimo this Saturday?
I think he's a knockout, man. I just feel like that Kambosa thing has a nasty taste in my mouth. So I just think, because I thought he, to me, he's one of the better young boxers in the game. His what he did to Lomachenko was amazing. I think Lomachenko started to figure him out towards the end, but what he did was amazing.
Though. I don't think he started to figure him out. He started to figure him out.
Right.
And if we are to believe Teofimo Lopez, Lomachenko, he did have a torn rotator cuff. Even though with that in the last five rounds, he was turning it on.
He was turning it up. So, but it was an impressive outing, whatever which way. But I just did that. Him not having that type of focus going into that Kambosa fight annoyed me. So I think to me, this fight, he has to show the world that, like, all right, he's back. Like, you know, being that type of boxer. We saw what Devin Haney did to Kambosa. So it's like, all right, so this fight here, this is not Kambosa, but this fight here against Campa, he has to show out. You know what I mean? Because then it's a whole different talk, a whole different process, especially moving up to junior welterweight. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Especially moving up. So you're going to have to show. And luckily, I think we all believe that his power is going to translate well at junior welterweight because he just has that type of power, but we'll see.
Okay, so you're saying he needs one of those star performances.
Yeah, I think seven rounds.
He needs a knock. He needs to thoroughly dominate this
yes.
contest, and he needs a knockout
yes.
around six, around the later seventh or eighth
to
round.
To build up that public view, you know what I mean? Like, to build it up a little bit more, yeah. That's my
thing. To get the public back in his corner for all of us to
To get the hype train back
for all of us to salivate over Teofimo Lopez as one of the elite stars, like young elite
about,
stars
like
in boxing.
Tank, like we talk about tanking everybody else.
Okay, well, all right. That's fair. Mm. As Ray says, I say that a lot. That's kind of my go-to phrase. That's fair. But let me ask you this. Teofimo doesn't come out looking great. Oof. He has a tough fight. It goes to a decision. He gets a split decision. Ooh. What do you think this does? What do you think that does for Teofimo in that scenario?
Oh, it hurts. It hurts him mentally. It hurts him. I think it mentally hurts him. I'm just thinking it's gonna be crippling because then you got Kambosa. You lost to Kambosa, and then you had to go to a distance against a guy that you should pretty much. This is like a layup for you to kind of to go handle. There's no and any fight you could be taken care of. Don't get twisted, but this I think it would be damaging to the ego. You know what I mean? Just like we talk about what's his name, Edgar, the dude who not on for Top Rank that
Belaga,
mm-hmm. yeah, Belaga. After he got once he got touched and looked vulnerable. It's been consistent, and now look at where he's at now, biting ears or whatever. So, you know, I'm just saying, like, to a certain – I'm not saying that Teofimo's at that level in terms of just snapping or whatever. But I'm saying that it will do something to the confidence level. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you were the guy, like, you were on that top tier, you know, pound for pound list, and people were talking like, oh, you the next big thing. It was like, he ain't beating Tank. I mean, Tank ain't beating him, or Devin Haney ain't beating him, or folks like that. Folks were dismissing it. Now it's like, yo, you're starting to become an afterthought. Now, I mean, he's moved up now, obviously, in weight, but I'm saying, like, he's becoming that afterthought. So I feel like if he loses, ugh.
All right, well, to me, I think it's
not lose, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, to me, I think it's important for him to have a good showing for this reason and this reason only. We're starting to come to the end of kind of the summer season for boxing. You know, we have one big card that's coming up on the 20th where we have the rematch between Anthony Joshua and Usyk in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, then you got Triple G coming up.
And then you have Triple G versus Canelo to kind of get us to break us in kind of the fall, boxing card. But I think, you know, a star-making performance for him is essential. You know, he'll be on one of, if not the biggest, one of the biggest platforms in sports with ESPN. Yeah. You know, that fight will be on ESPN and ESPN Plus. And against a guy...
Pedro Campra?
Yeah, excuse me, Pedro Campra. A guy who doesn't really, who isn't a huge name.
Yeah.
This is the type of fight that you need to kind of get your confidence back. And I don't know... You know, I haven't listened to any of the pre-fight kind of build-up or interviews. I'll probably get into that starting tomorrow. But, you know, Teofimo Lopez, you know, to me, a little bit was taken from him from some of that cockiness, some of that swagger that he's had, for lack of a better word. So for him to go back in the ring and have an impressive performance and to get some of that confidence because he's been out of the ring so long, I think it's essential for him. The first, you know, I know you said he needs a star performance, but I think one, he needs that confidence back to go in there under live fires and let the world know, hey, I'm Teofimo Lopez. I was just a couple months ago, I was on top of the world. You know, I've defeated Lomachenko, you know, lost to Kambosos, but I'm still a star. I'm still here. And because of his personality and because, of the matchmaking at Top Rank, they, you know, if they view him as, I don't think this is an industry secret or anything, but if they view him as kind of one of the next top guys, they'll bring him along at a pace and at a position where they'll line up the opponents to make him look good until he gets back to the point where, hey, maybe Lomachenko gets, goes up to junior welterweight and gets a title, and you know, maybe there's a rematch there. We don't know.
There's definitely money on the table for him. I mean, he went back to Top Rank after being a trailer.
well, he never left,
but you know,
Top
I mean.
Rank. Yeah, but Bob Arum, they refused to pay the money for that fight.
Yeah, but now he's like, he's all in.
He's all in
with Top Rank right now. And like to your point, they're going to build him up, but we can't forget that what Teofimo Lopez is though. Like he's a brash young man, right? Like he does flips in the ring. So to get that dude back, I feel like he needs that type. But he needs a good outing, and I'm not saying like a dominant outing where he showcases his skill and his power. You know what I mean? Like he needs that outing. But I'm with you though. Bob Arum is going to put him in a situation to succeed. The best situation to succeed. I'm not going to say that he's going to succeed. The best situation to succeed. Because again, two guys are in the ring. One dude, both individuals are trying to take off each other's heads off, right? So that alone is a challenge. So for Teofimo Lopez, you know, this fight is big. Like it's big, man. It's a big fight for him. I expect him to show out though. I do. I expect him to show out because I'm a believer in his skill set. I feel like once if he takes his opponent serious and takes his craft serious, like that same focus he had against Lomachenko, that same focus. Though we both admitted that Lomachenko down the stretch figured him out, but he had focus though during the first early rounds. He was focused. Like Teofimo Lopez was focused. he has that, if he has that same focus throughout, I mean, after the Kambosos loss, he continues, he has that focus against Lomachenko, then he'll be fine. Because to me, he's just that talented. He's that talented of a boxer.
Yep. So, you know, Friday, we'll see. You know, I hope, hopefully he doesn't put too much pressure on himself. He comes out relaxed and he fights the type of fight that that the world knows he's capable of, and he's also and he knows that he's capable of.
And also, you know, you heard that Earl and Bud, like, they're this close. November. Like, they're this close.
Yeah, I mean, allegedly it was October. Now it's November. I've always thought it's November just from a scheduling perspective. Just from a scheduling perspective, because we all know what happens in November is college football. And, you know, if the fight is going to be on Showtime, Showtime, I believe, is a Viacom property. I could be mistaken,
yeah,
but, you know.
Showtime is,
yeah,
it's CBS.
Viacom, CBS. Yeah. So, you know, we all know what's big on CBS, college football. So they'll have a great lead in with a elite college football matchup, and then Saturday night we'll get Crawford and Spence. Hopefully, man. And,
hopefully,
you know, and hopefully PBC, they'll grant us our our press credentials.
Hopefully, man, for real. Because my man, this is reported by Dan Raphael. It said deal for Spence Crawford is nearing completion.
Well,
and the fight is penciled in for
the 12th or the 19th. Yeah, but, well, I'll say this. Well, if it is, then you would probably you want a 90-day buildup, so you have to announce the fight sometime
soon,
over the next couple of weeks,
yeah,
and going into September.
It's got to be built. That's what I'm saying. Remember back in the day when we were younger, man, with Tyson fights, you get built up?
Yeah, like, man. Holyfield, Bo,
like, them things are built up.
Yeah, but I think one of the things that was essential to those buildups were guys actually went from city to city, and they did promotion, right?
Yeah,
and they did
true.
That promotion on urban radio, and they did it on other sports, local sports radio channels. So, you know, if the fight's going to do the numbers that we all think it can do, then, you know, it's got to be a hell of a promotion, and you got to announce it pretty soon. Because I think this is a fight that's huge within boxing, but, like, general pop culture, I don't think it's
not that.
That's
what I'm saying, you
need to hype
it. Yeah. So that's why I think you need to hype it. I think for boxing, like you said, boxing culture, it is what it is. You don't get a bunch of the boxing fans come out and watch it, right? But
yeah,
pop culture, you're right. I feel like you gotta advertise that part for pop culture so they can understand how this is a party scene. Like, you got to be here for this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't even think that the Canelo and Triple G, the trilogy fight, I don't even think that's, like, a fight that the general public is that excited over.
It wasn't beginning. I don't know now.
I mean, maybe closer as we draw.
I feel like this fight isn't that big to me.
It's 4 years since the rematch.
Know what I mean?
I still want to see it.
I want to see it. Like,
I think some of the luster is, you know, Canelo lost.
Yes.
Even though against a bigger guy. And then, you know, Triple G hasn't been as active.
Yeah, so it's not same thing.
The hype isn't where it should be for that fight. But I still plan on watching it. I think it's going to be a hell of a fight.
I think they're great partners. They're great dance partners.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It is what it is. Hey, this has been a dope show. But make sure you subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, follow us on Twitter at Urban Sports Scene, IG at Urban Sports Scene, and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. And again, I said this in the beginning, I'm going to say it again. Subscribe to our Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel, man.
Wale get those checks from YouTube,
checks,
man.
Not the money, not the cash. I want them checks. Not the currency check. I want the likes checks. I want the subscribe checks. You know what I'm saying? I want those checks. Hey, check out the home of the urban sports scene, Amplifier Media, at amplifiermedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Amplifier shows, as well as other great content. Hey, thanks to you all for tuning in. Thank the homie Lake for being a guest on the show. Gave us some laughs. That was kind of funny.
Absolutely, man.
big laughs. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene
for ages.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.